views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network. Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast from behind these enemy lines that I call the USA Inc. Today's date is, of course, 12-10. That's December the 10th, 2015. It's a Thursday afternoon. Broadcasting from North Carolina. It's been a beautiful day here. Even though we are getting close to winter, it's just great weather here in North Carolina. Today we do have a program scheduled for you, of course, and we are going to be talking about, or continuing to talk about, as we have discussed the past few days, about the fraud that went down in Washington, D.C. Yesterday about 11 a.m. In Emancipation Hall, which is located in the federal building there in Washington, D.C. And you had President Obama, all of the congressional leaders, as well as some other people who participated in a fraudulent ceremony to pretend like the 13th Amendment, which was passed in 1865, it actually wasn't ratified by all the states until 2013, with Mississippi being the last state to ratify the 13th Amendment. For those who don't know what the 13th Amendment pertains to, that is the constitutional amendment that many people will point to and say slavery was abolished in this country at the conclusion of the Civil War. But most of those people have never actually read the 13th Amendment, which has a giant exception clause in it that says that except for punishment for crime. It says slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except for punishment for crime. And most of the people, when they write about it, I actually did a YouTube video about this. This was 2 years ago. It might have been a year ago. They were talking about the 150th anniversary to the conclusion of the Civil War, and they would print a portion of the 13th Amendment, even though the article wasn't about the 13th Amendment, but they would print only or publish only a portion of the 13th Amendment. And the 13th Amendment isn't very long. It's only a couple of sentences long. So I'm sure that they had space to include the 13th Amendment text in its entirety, and they did not. So I kept noticing a pattern among all of the corporate media websites I was going to that were writing about it, and I noticed if they mention the 13th Amendment at all, they only publish the first part of it that says slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished. But they totally left out the exception clause that then follows and says except for punishment for crime. House Speaker Paul Ryan posted on the House Speaker website, the official website. I remember I was alerted to this ceremony about a week before it happened. And on that page where he's promoting this upcoming ceremony, he only publishes a portion of the 13th Amendment. He doesn't publish the entire 13th Amendment. So that tells me then that you must have read that 13th Amendment. You saw that big exception clause that allows for slavery as punishment for crime, and instead of addressing that, you sought to continue to lie to people and to perpetuate the fraud that slavery was abolished in the United States. Because I mean, if it really abolished slavery as they say it does, then why won't you post the entire text? seems like they are hiding something. And again, this wasn't just Paul Ryan. I'm not picking on him. But, I mean, most of the mainstream writers that I have come across, whenever they write about this or they talk about slavery or they talk about the 13th Amendment, they fail to publish the text of the 13th Amendment. They fail to tell people the text of the 13th Amendment. So that tells me that they are very dishonest people and you should question them in everything that they do. So the top story today is President Obama's speech at this fraudulent 13th Amendment commemoration that was held yesterday in Emancipation Hall. What makes it really egregious coming from President Obama has nothing to do with his skin color. As I stated yesterday, many people falsely believe, whether they are white people, Hispanic people, black people in the United States, that every black person in the United States was brought here through the transatlantic slave trade when they were here before Columbus, so-called, which Columbus never set foot on the continental USA. So he really didn't discover anything. And plus, how can you discover something that has been occupied for thousands of years by people? And so there is another lie that is heavily promoted. And that is that every black person in this country is a descendant of enslaved Africans. And that's not true. If you look at the 1850 census that was done, you will see that there was about 500,000 free black people. Now, were some of them formerly enslaved and somehow won their freedom or set free or you know, won a lottery and was able to purchase their freedom? True story. These are true stories. People were playing the lottery back then, and they hit the lottery, and they were able to purchase their freedom. Okay. And so, yeah, there were a few free black people on this continent that were formerly enslaved. But the colonies had a huge population of African descended people. But you wouldn't know that if you open up one of these public school textbooks. If you open up one of these history books, you wouldn't know that about American history. And so, you know, I'm all about destroying myths. I'm all about exposing lies. And the reason that it is most egregious for President Obama to participate in this giant fraud, this perpetuation of this lie, is because he's a constitutional lawyer. I'm sure y'all have heard about that, right? I think he was even president of the Harvard Law Review at one time. And through another program that is produced on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com and airs on our digital radio station by the same name, we shared some audio from a video of President Obama speaking to some college students. I don't know what the occasion was about, but he was talking about Lincoln. Yeah, I think they were talking about the Civil War and whatnot, but he mentioned Lincoln, and he was talking about Lincoln's main objective was to keep the Union together, and if he could keep the Union together while leaving the institution of slavery in place, he would do it. If he could keep the Union together by abolishing slavery, he would do it. And so that's what I remember. That's what they were talking about. And he even mentioned the Emancipation Proclamation, and he rightly pointed out to those students that the Emancipation Proclamation did not free every enslaved African, that states like Kentucky that were practicing slavery were not prohibited from continuing their practice of slavery because they were still in the Union. They were not in rebellion. And so the Emancipation Proclamation did not apply to the state of Kentucky or any other counties in states that was practicing slavery as long as those states were not in rebellion. So Obama knows this. He studied the history. I think he's even said that President Abraham Lincoln is his icon, you know, one of his favorite presidents and whatnot. And again, he is by trade or by his education. Is a lawyer, and he knows. He should. If he doesn't know, he should know. I mean, if he doesn't know, that would tell me that he never read the 13th Amendment, because No one can read that 13th Amendment, especially someone trained in law, and say with a straight face to me that the 13th Amendment abolishes slavery. Again, don't take my word for it. Go read the amendment for yourself. And there have also been movies, a documentary that I would recommend to everyone that you would watch. It's on YouTube. You can watch it for free on YouTube. But it's based on the book Slavery by Another Name. And it was turned into a PBS documentary. And I have reached out to the author of that book, Mr. Blackman, today. I don't recall his first name, but Mr. Blackman is the one who wrote that book. I'm not sure when it came out, but I do know the movie or the documentary came out in 2008. That was the year that President Obama took office. And so anyone who is running around talking about slavery has been abolished in this country and they're calling it mass incarceration are woefully ignorant. It's not mass incarceration. It's a continuation of slavery. Just cause every black person is not on a prison plantation, the new plantations of the day. Just because every black person is not in chains or behind bars, that does not mean slavery doesn't exist. Because again, not every black person or African descended person on this continent came here because of slavery or because they were enslaved, because they were kidnapped from the continent of Africa, mostly West African countries. So, slavery still exists, people. Now, that's the top story that I would like to discuss with you today or share with you today. The other story is concerning Abigail Fisher. Abigail Fisher is a white woman. She's in her mid-20s now, but y'all may remember her case from a few years ago where she sued the University of Texas and said that affirmative action kept her from getting into school. And that's why she wasn't accepted to the University of Texas. So for the second time, that case is back before the Supreme Court. A lot of news headlines were generated yesterday by Justice Anton Scalia, who was making some pretty racist comments, man. I'm not really here today to really talk about. Look, Scalia is a racist. All right, it's evident by many of the things that he has said and whatnot. And if he's sitting around talking about, you know, black students are being harmed by allowing them to get into these universities like the University of Texas, where they don't do well and they flunk out of school and all of that. All of that is based on a lie. I would like to know where he got that information from. I actually contacted a professor of law from UCLA's law school. I'm not going to say her name yet. We'll say that to see if she accepts our invitation for an interview. But I saw some information that she put out that says that, you know, all of that is incorrect information. A study, there was actually a study that this is based on, that affirmative action is harming black people. And he used faulty data on that. And I came across a piece today that shows that, you know, he's basically smudging the facts or something like that. But anyway, Abigail Fisher. Now, I paid attention because I am a citizen journalist and I've been doing broadcast digital radio since 2007, focused on political and social issues. So I knew about her case, but I really didn't look that much into her specifically. But now more detailed information is coming out about her. And it's not that she didn't get into the University of Texas because of affirmative action and some less deserving non-white person got her slot or something like that. No, she had a very poor academic record. And even if, from what I was reading, even if affirmative action did not exist, you know, she still wouldn't have got in. Unless she was one of those white people who came from a poor family. And even though their grades and their SAT scores may not have been up to par and what the University of Texas was looking for, Well, perhaps they had some extracurricular activities they were engaged in, like art or, you know, civic organizations or things like, you know, they had something else to offer with their academic record than just scores. A bunch of, you know, white people got into the University of Texas based on that criteria. But I imagine maybe she wasn't in the chess club. Maybe, you know, she wasn't in the on the debate team. Maybe, you know, once she was finished with school, the regular school day, she was done with it. And she wasn't volunteer to be nothing, part of nothing else and whatnot. So that's the reason she didn't get in. It's not because some poor person, whether they was a poor white person or whether they were a black person, a Hispanic person. No, then nobody get her slot. What it is that she was undeserving of the slot. And instead of her going to another university, let's say community college or something like that, bring her grades up, participate in some extracurricular activities, and then maybe in a year or two, transfer to the University of Texas, and then she can get in that way. No, she didn't want to do that. What did she want to do? She wanted to play the race card. She wants you to believe that white people are being discriminated against because of all these undeserving non-white people are taking our places in higher education and on jobs and things of that nature. But here's the thing, though. Anybody who has done some research on affirmative action, you would know that affirmative action is not really benefiting a whole lot of black people. I mean, they could get rid of it today, and it would only impact probably about less than 2% of black people who may have been gotten into a program, into a school, or were hired because of affirmative action and diversity initiatives. But, you know, that's a very small percentage, and as that UCLA law professor was talking about in some of her writings, is that, you know, affirmative action ain't really helping a whole lot of black people even go to law school or anything like that. It's not really a big deal. It's not like it's really helping a whole lot of black people, but just that ideal is enough to make people like Abigail Fisher start, you know, filing frivolous lawsuits, trying to get a bunch of money. And by the way, she comes from a wealthy Texas family, probably, you know, got oil fields and things of that. I don't know how her family made their money or whatnot, but she's very rich. She's a rich girl, and so she probably kind of spoiled. Not to say that all, you know, children of wealthy people are spoiled. I don't want to engage in stereotypes or anything, but just based off of her actions and how she's conducting herself, she's probably used to having everything she has asked for. And the first time somebody told her no, the University of Texas telling her no, and she doesn't know how to handle it other than to file a frivolous lawsuit. So those are some news stories, or a news story that I like to throw out there. And lastly, the last thing that I want to talk about, it was shared on Facebook, on social media, by a person that independent media producer Yvette Carnell of BreakingBrown.com. I'm going to have to get an interview with her and bring her on. It's been a while since she's been on the program. But she shared an article. She didn't write the article. She didn't publish it on Breaking Brown, but she thought it was an interesting article that was arguing that we need more black attorneys to perhaps, you know, try to fix the criminal justice system and whatnot. You know, just the same as we've been hearing people saying, we need more black cops. Yeah, we need more black cops on the block. And that'll solve, you know, the problems that many people are facing through the criminal justice system, which, again, is only an extension of the 13th Amendment and practicing slavery. Because, again, you know, the only legal way that you can enslave somebody today is to convict them of a crime. And so you got to have a cop to charge them with a crime before you can convict them of a crime and then sentence them to slavery. And so my thing is, the whole notion that having more black attorneys, having more black cops, is somehow going to bring about a more just society is a bunch of crap. That's a bunch of crap. That's a huge fallacy. I don't need a whole bunch of black cops in my community running around, stopping and frisking people, writing tickets so that they can meet a quota, arresting people on nonviolent, victimless drug crimes, and, destroying their lives and whatnot. No, I don't need no more black cops. You know, I don't see cops as any different than being a slave catcher from which they started, I want to take a look at some of the merits of that article and see what they're talking about. If you would like to get in on the conversation, let me go ahead and give out the telephone numbers. And I'm just realizing on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, I forgot to put the phone number to the conference line. But most people should know it by heart. But I'll go ahead and give that out. There are three ways that you can contact the program. The first way is to give us a call on the conference line, which is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032-POUND. That's 549032-POUND. Greetings to those already dialed in, listening through their telephones. Just hit *6 and 1 at any time you would like to signal me, and I'll bring you into the dialogue. The other phone number you can get in through the studio line, just give us a call at 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. That is the studio line, and that's a number that's a lot easier to remember. The last and final way that you can ask me a question, share an observation, share some information, is through the video chat room that we're using on blab.im. This is only my third attempt at using this, and so you can chime in that way for those that's listening to the program through there. So let's go ahead and get started. I don't really plan on staying on air a long time today. Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Brother Dave has been off all of this week because of the move that he's making from one state to another. But he contacted me today to let all the fans of Tando Radio Show know that he will be on air at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So just wanted to let you all know that. I will only be on air as needed because I got a whole lot of work to do as the administrator of Black Talk Media Project, or I should say the founder of Black Talk Media Project, but the administrator of Black Talk Radio Network, as we are trying to expand our media, our global media reach, and I'm working with some new software and just trying to figure out some things. All right, so let's go ahead and give a listen to President Obama giving his speech yesterday at the 150th anniversary. Now, listen. I did not choose this headline. I'm reading a headline from it was a YouTube post by Uptake Video, which is actually based in Minnesota. And they do a lot of great work and whatnot, but they seem to be ignorant about the 13th Amendment, because this is what they chose for their YouTube channel, for the YouTube video. Obama marks 150th anniversary of end of slavery. Full speech. And the speech is about 17 minutes long. So again, I'm not going to call anyone ignorant. I'm not going to call anyone stupid. If they believe that slavery was abolished, because up until about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I believed the same thing. I knew something was wrong, and I was more inclined to believe it was mass incarceration than, actually being slavery. But then, I read the 13th Amendment, and my eyes were open wide. I was like, wow, how come my teacher, my history school teacher, didn't tell me this about the 13th? Matter of fact, why didn't, and I had a male high school history teacher, why didn't he tell me anything about the 13th Amendment? He didn't even bring up the 13th Amendment, all right? And then all we talked about briefly was, you know, the Civil War and how black people got set free from slavery and end the story. And no, that's not the end of the story. And again, slavery was never abolished, and it is especially egregious. It is especially offensive for the CEO of America, President Obama, all right, who is a constitutional lawyer. All right, that's in his bio, constitutional lawyer with the Harvard Law School, president of the Harvard Law Review and all that. And then this man is up here participating in this great fraud. It's the greatest fraud that has ever been perpetuated upon mankind, to tell the world that the United States abolished slavery at the conclusion of the Civil War. That's got to be the greatest lie, man. That's got to be greater than any lie Hitler ever told to the world. So let's go ahead and give it a listen. I'm going to be taking notes. I hope you'll take some notes. Pay attention to the words that's being said. And if you feel like chiming in, by all means, do so. But you know I'm going to have plenty to say because, like I said, I take notes. So this is President Obama marking the 150th anniversary of the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which I cannot say enough, did not end slavery.
In giving freedom to the slave, we assure freedom to the free. That's what President Lincoln once wrote. Honorable alike in what we give and what we preserve. We shall nobly save or meanly lose the last best hope of earth. Mr. Speaker, leaders and members of both parties, distinguished guests, we gather here to commemorate a century and a half of freedom, not simply for former slaves, but for all of us. Today, the issue of chattel slavery seems so simple, so obvious. It is wrong in every sense. Stealing men, women, and children from their homelands, tearing husbands from wife, parent from child, stripped and sold to the highest bidder, shackled in chains and bloodied with the whip. It's antithetical not only to our conception of human rights and dignity, but to our conception of ourselves, a people founded on the premise that all are created equal. And to many at the time, that judgment was clear as well. Preachers, black and white, railed against this moral outrage from the pulpit. Former slaves rattled the conscience of Americans in books and pamphlets and speeches. Men and women organized anti-slavery conventions and fundraising drives. Farmers and shopkeepers opened their barns, their homes, their cellars as way stations on an underground railroad, where African Americans often risked their own freedom to ensure the freedom of others. And enslaved Americans, with no rights of their own, they ran north and kept the flame of freedom burning, passing it from one generation to the next, with their faith and their dignity and their song. The reformers' passion only drove the protectors of the status quo to dig in harder. And for decades, America wrestled with the issue of slavery in a way that we have with no other before or since. It shaped our politics, and it nearly tore us asunder. Tensions ran so high, so personal, that at one point a lawmaker was beaten unconscious on the Senate floor. Eventually, war broke out. Brother against brother, North against South. At its heart, the question of slavery was never simply about civil rights. It was about the meaning of America, the kind of country we wanted to be, whether this nation might fulfill the call of its birth. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. President Lincoln understood that if we were ever to fully realize that founding promise, it meant not just signing an Emancipation Proclamation, not just winning a war. It meant making the most powerful collective statement we can in our democracy, etching our values into our Constitution. He called it a king's cure for all the evils. 150 years proved the cure to be necessary but not sufficient. Progress proved halting, too often deferred. Newly freed slaves may have been liberated by the letter of the law, but their daily lives told another tale. They couldn't vote. They couldn't fill most occupations. They couldn't protect themselves or their families from indignity or from violence. And so abolitionists and freedmen and women and radical Republicans kept cajoling and kept rabble-rousing, and within a few years of the war's end at Appomattox, we passed two more amendments guaranteeing voting rights, birthright citizenship, equal protection under the law, and still it wasn't enough. For another century, we saw segregation and Jim Crow make a mockery of these amendments, and we saw justice turn a blind eye to mobs with nooses slung over trees. We saw bullets and bombs terrorize generations. And yet, through all this, the call to freedom survived. We hold these truths to be self-evident. And eventually a new generation rose up to march and to organize and to stand up and to sit in for the moral force of nonviolence and the sweet sound of those same freedom songs that slaves had sung so long ago, crying out not for special treatment but for equal rights, calling out for basic justice promised to them almost a century before. Like their abolitionist predecessors, they were plain, humble, ordinary people, armed with little but faith. Faith in the Almighty, faith in each other, and faith in America. Hope, in the face so often of all evidence to the contrary that something better lay around the bend. Because of them, maids and porters and students and farmers and priests and housewives. Because of them, a civil rights law was passed and a voting rights law was signed. And doors of opportunity swung open, not just for the black porter, but also for the white chambermaid and the immigrant dishwasher, so that their daughters and their sons might finally imagine a life for themselves beyond washing somebody else's laundry shining somebody else's shoes. Freedom for you and for me. Freedom for all of us. And that's what we celebrate today. The long arc of progress. Progress that is never assured, never guaranteed, but always possible. Always there to be earned. No matter how stuck we might seem sometimes, no matter how divided or despairing we may appear, no matter what ugliness may bubble up, progress, so long as we're willing to push for it. So long as we're willing to reach for each other. We would do a disservice to those warriors of justice, Tubman and Douglas, and Lincoln and King, were we to deny that the scars of our nation's original sin are still with us today. We condemn ourselves to shackles once more if we fail to answer those who wonder if they're truly equals in their communities, or in their justice systems, or in the job interview. We betray the efforts of the past if we fail to push back against bigotry in all its forms. But we betray our most noble past as well if we were to deny the possibility of movement, the possibility of progress. If we were to let cynicism consume us and fear overwhelm us. If we lost hope, for however slow, however incomplete, however harshly, loudly, rudely challenged at each point along our journey in America, we can create the change that we seek. All it requires is that our generation be willing to do what those who came before us have done, to rise above the cynicism and rise above the fear, to hold fast to our values, to see ourselves in each other, to cherish dignity and opportunity, not just for our own children, but for somebody else's child. To remember that our freedom is bound up with the freedom of others, regardless of what they look like, or where they come from, or what their last name is, or what faith they practice. To be honorable. To be honorable alike in what we give and what we preserve. To nobly save or meanly lose the last best hope of earth. To nobly save or meanly lose the last best hope of earth. That is our choice. Today, we affirm hope. Thank you. God bless you. May God bless the United States of America.
Well, it's showing that I got like 3 minutes left in this audio clip, so I guess they applauded this man for like 3+ minutes, but I'm not trying to hear that.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, broadcasting on the Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. I took a whole bunch of notes. I could have took more. I have like a page full of notes. Wow. You know, that's just so sad that a constitutional lawyer would get up there and give a nearly, 15-minute speech. Or nothing but, you know, mixing some truth with some lies, all to perpetuate the greatest lie, which is slavery was never abolished in this country. All right, so he started off by talking about we've had 150 years of freedom in this country, talking about the passage of the Emancipation Proclamation, but the 13th Amendment, which again, the state of Mississippi did not ratify until 2013. Okay. But he talked about we had 150 years of freedom. Now, then he went on to document all of the terrorism that black people faced during the Jim Crow years and whatnot. And, you know, being subjected. He never mentioned the black codes, obviously, but, you know, we get it. He did acknowledge all of that terrorism that followed after the Civil War. But then, you know, how can you say 150 years of freedom unless you are in the belief that the 13th Amendment actually ended the institution of slavery? Now, he said chattel slavery is wrong in all its forms. Well, chattel slavery still exists today. What does chattel slavery mean? Well, it comes from cattle. It comes talking about cattle. You know, I'm moo, the cows and all of that, cattle. So, you know, someone came up with the term chattel slavery. All it means is that you are another person's piece of property, that you are property. That's what chattel slavery means. See, there's a difference between chattel slavery and involuntary servitude. While there's not much of a difference, I would say, involuntary servitude, because it's involuntary. I did not volunteer to be your manservant for 7 years, and then when I'm finished, after that term is up, you're going to grant me a piece of land, and I get to call my own, and then I get to be a free man too. No, we ain't talking about that. We ain't talking about voluntary, where people voluntarily put themselves into some form of bondage or servitude to work for other people. But again, chattel slavery, all it means is that a human being is being treated like a piece of property. He is recognized under the law as a piece of property, or she. I don't mean to be gender specific or anything like that, but every person who is in a state prison, who is in a county jail, who is in a federal prison, they are legally classified as the property of that county, the property of that state, the property of that federal government. So chattel slavery still exists if we're meaning that human beings are being treated as a commodity from which profits can be derived. That still exists to this day. Just going to go down my list of notes here. He talked about former slaves being abolitionists throughout his entire speech, throughout the speech that I heard from most of the other people, black or white, that got up to speak that I watched yesterday. And again, most of the black people that I talk to or I hear speaking today make this same assumption, which is a lie, that all black people ever was in this country was slaves. And he talked about former slaves being abolitionists. First of all, that's a politically incorrect term, an inhumane term to use to call somebody a slave. They were human beings who were enslaved. So the term that I use and other people use is enslaved African. Because slave, calling somebody a slave, I mean, that just strips them of their humanity. Oh, they're a slave. You know, slaves are, hey, you know, they're not as good as free people and all this and that. And so, but because, again, we created the program, New Abolitionist Radio, which airs on Wednesdays nights at 8 o'clock p.m. We've been doing that program for over 3 years, been doing a whole lot of research and bringing on people, experts in their fields, so to speak, and talking about slavery. Now, one of the things that we talked about, or one of the things that we always do, we do an abolitionist in profile, right? We go back and we look at, well, who are the identifiable abolitionists of the day? Yeah, Frederick Douglass, a lot of people know him. A lot of people know Harriet Tubman. They know Sojourner Truth. Yes, those were formerly enslaved Africans. Okay, they were formerly enslaved, but they were not the only abolitionists. It was just 2 weeks ago we talked about one free black man, never was enslaved in his life, who was a businessman, who was one of the wealthiest people, period, black or white, in this country. All right, and how he used his wealth, a portion of his wealth, to support the abolitionist movement, to actually help people escape on the Underground Railroad. That man had never been enslaved in his life. He was a successful businessman, and he chose to use his wealth in the cause of freedom, in the cause of ending slavery. If you recall the movie 12 Years a Slave, Solomon Northrop. Well, Solomon Northrop was not ever enslaved until he was kidnapped by them white men that he was looking to do business with. He was going to play the fiddle and make some money, you know, entertaining white folks at their parties and whatnot. And they kidnapped him and put him into slavery. Okay, and so then that's when the book came along, 12 Years a Slave. He talked about being kidnapped, sold into slavery, and then being freed. But he did not start off enslaved. He was free. He was one of the half a million, hundreds of thousands of free black people who have been on this continent before the United States of America ever existed. They had been on this continent going back as far as we can document the 1500s. If even before that, if we want to talk about the Olmecs, if we want to talk about the Mississippian nation, of which I'm a descendant of, indigenous nations that existed on this continent before the USA was created. So, again, he is just telling people, I guess, what he believes, because, you know, I don't know how much studying of black history he has done. I don't know where he got his information from. And then, you know, black people always got to be praying. Black people always got to be singing. Black people always got to be marching. You know, and he talked about them having their faith and through their song and all that. Man, get out of here with that. Man, I'm going to try to stay codified. Get out of here with them stereotypes. All right. A lot of black people was not praying to God for the freedom of other black people. A lot of them were not, you know, singing old Negro spirituals and pleading to the racist enslaver to set them free. No, they weren't doing that. No, they were among those 200,000 or so free black Union soldiers who picked up the rifle, who picked up the gun, who came into the South. You know, I've done a lot of research on the local area that I live in. Well, North Carolina in general. All right. Because, again, you know, history is important. It's always been one of my favorite subjects. And so I do a lot of research on it. And so, you know, North Carolina, the 13th colony, if you will. I don't know if it was the last colony. I don't think so. But it was among the original 13 colonies. Sent 400 plus free African soldiers to fight against the British in the Continental Army. All right. They were never enslaved. They wasn't praying on their knees and singing, you know, spirituals and all that. No, they was like, you know, we want to get free. We're going to pick up this gun. Same thing with the Civil War. Same thing with the Civil War. And then even those who were enslaved, the Nat Turners, the Gabriel Prossers and all, they wasn't praying to God. And Nat Turner was a very religious person, very religious. Even after he was indoctrinated into Christianity, he embraced that religion and he read that religion and he prayed every day, very spiritual person. And he saw a sign from God that told him to go gather up other enslaved individuals and to cut the head off of the racist enslaver. And they did. They killed men, women, and children lest they grow up to be enslavers themselves. They, you know, bloodshed is what happened. And I get sick and tired of people always pretending or promoting the black people. The only way we're going to get something done is if we be nonviolent. If we hold hands and pray together and sing and shuffle our feet, because that's what marching is, and shuffling our feet, and that's going to get us free. No. And that's not to belittle that as a political tactic. Marching has its place. Holding hands and praying. You know, I ain't got a problem with people praying for victory and whatnot. But I just get sick and tired of that being portrayed as the only thing black people, the only tactic black people use in this country to get free. And all the abolitionists, John Brown, white male. Man, do you know how many white slavers he killed, him and his sons killed? And he was a preacher. He was a Christian preacher. All right. And you know, read about John Brown putting broadswords through people's backs, in slavers' backs in Bleeding Kansas. Read about the story about Bleeding Kansas and how it got that name. Because John Brown and the crew was shedding blood, all right, and they were taking out these enslavers. What else did he talk about? Slavery never being about civil rights. I don't know where he was going with that, but again, you know, a lot of people, even today, will talk about civil rights. Civil rights don't mean nothing, all right? What you want is your human rights. You want your human rights as a human being. Civil rights, that which they give, that which they can take away, is what I say. And he even mentioned, you know, the Voting Rights Act and blah, 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 which has been gutted, which has recently been gutted. And there's always been an assault on the voting rights of non-white people. And we can even say the elderly now and young people, students. And so that's been gutted. That's been gutted, and so, you know, it ain't about no civil rights, bro. It's about some human rights. And another thing that really was, it was kind of annoying to me. I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, okay, because I don't want to curse anyone out. I don't want to engage in any name calling or anything like that, but it just was really annoying to me how he kept lacing in his comments, the words of Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration, all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with unalienable rights and whatnot. Now, every once in a while, you will hear me quote a white supremacist, but I'll make it clear that that person was a white supremacist. And the only reason I'm quoting them is because it is a undeniable truth, and the truth is the truth, and it stands alone, no matter who says it. But it's particularly annoying to me that during this event where you're pretending like slavery was abolished, and you're going to quote one of the most vicious, racist enslavers known to the history of this country, Thomas Jefferson. This was a vile, despicable, sick human being, and it was only recently where I discovered he is the father of chattel slavery in this country. This man was he was so obsessed with creating wealth through slavery, through the enslavement of other human beings. He came up with a formula that showed for every enslaved African child born on his plantation that his wealth increased, I think it was up to 5%. For every enslaved baby born on his plantation, this man had done an audit of his plantation, of his estate. And he had it down to a science. For every little black baby born on my plantation, my wealth is increasing up to 5%. And he wrote this down. And he suggested it to other people. And other people looked at his formula. And they followed that formula to the point that it didn't matter if you abolished. It didn't matter whether or not the British and other countries had outlawed the transatlantic slave trade and were sending ships out into the Atlantic Ocean to stop the slave ships and free the people. It didn't matter because now, following the model of Thomas Jefferson, you're producing your victims, let's call them victims, you're producing your victims domestically. You no longer need to pay for a ship to go out to Africa to kidnap men, women, and children and bring them back here and then, you know, take them to Wall Street. Yes, Wall Street. All right. And take them to Wall Street and other in Charleston, the other large slave trading blocks. All right. So it was totally self-contained. They were breeding them like cattle. Right. That's where chattel slavery comes from. That's where that term comes from, because now you're breeding your property and you're, you know, causing your property to increase. Through breeding. That's who Thomas Jefferson, that's what he the father of. He is the father of chattel slavery in the United States of America. All right. That is who that man is. Now, let me tell you a little something else about him. All right. Now, he was married to a white woman. Right. Y'all know that. Right. He was married to this white woman. They had several children and whatnot. Now, that white woman that he was married to, and I don't remember her name. I got a lot of information in my head, so I don't always remember names right off. But his wife, her father was a white slaver, just like Thomas Jefferson. And he, like Thomas Jefferson, was raping his enslaved women, right? Because they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the power to say no, all right? Because then they would just get brutally beaten and slavery going to take it anyway, all right? So, Thomas Jefferson's wife, his father-in-law, had a child, produced a child through one of his enslaved African women. And when that little girl grew up, was the same age as Thomas Jefferson's now wife, all right? Thomas Jefferson saw her, and she was so pretty, you know, according to Thomas Jefferson, he couldn't resist, right? So he bought her. He bought this enslaved African woman, Sally Hemings, I think is her name, bought her. This is really his wife's half-sister now. This is his wife's half-sister through her father, who produced this child with an enslaved African woman, all right? So that's her half sister, right? He buys her half sister. Did he set her free? Nah, he ain't set her free. He was like, y'all, that's a shame that your sister is enslaved. That's y'all blood. I'ma free her. I'ma purchase her from your father, and I'ma free her since he ain't gonna free her. And I just can't stand to see you know, somebody treating their offspring like, no, 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 no. Thomas Jefferson, that became his sex slave, if you will. That's the most accurate way we can describe it. People want to try to romanticize their relationship. Oh, they were in love and he took her everywhere that he went. Look, that woman didn't have a choice, okay? She didn't have a choice. If she had a choice, do you think that she would have stayed with that old crusty white man? I don't think so. I don't think so. And even if she did, she didn't have a choice entering into it. She was a piece of property. She was his piece of property. He didn't free her. That was his property to have sex with anytime he got ready to. And again, this is the half-sister of his wife. While he's having sex with this woman that he has enslaved, that's his wife's half-sister. So that makes him also an adulterer, right? That makes him an adulterer. And that's why they'll tell you quickly that Thomas Jefferson never talked about Christianity being the basis of the founding of the United States, because he was a devil. That man was a devil. Now, he believed in a higher power and all that and whatnot, but he, you know, he believed in his own power, in his own godhood. And so this man was disgusting, and it is disgusting whenever I hear people like President Obama and others constantly quote this man without telling you how disgusting he was. Because he could have added in there, we know Thomas Jefferson wrote these words, that all men are created equal, endowed with inalienable rights by their creator. But we know he was a hypocrite, and we know that that was not fully realized, and that this war had to be fought, the Civil War, to make it, you know. So, no, he ain't say that. He just kept repeating it over and over as if, you know, for a sound bite or something. Really kind of sound like he plagiarized his speech, or he just, you know, took some quotes from here and there and everywhere and you know, passing it off as his own. So, I mean, that just really disgusts me whenever I hear people quote Thomas Jefferson. That's why I am at odds with people in the quote-unquote patriot movement who look at Thomas Jefferson and Washington and others as your founding fathers. Well, your founding fathers were a bunch of evil men who practiced slavery and were genocidal maniacs, okay? So, you know, if that's who you worshiping, then get far away from me, all right? Because if you don't see nothing wrong with you idolizing people like that, then, you know, you may not even have any morals. You may not even have a conscience. And I'm not one to ignore history. Talking about the 13th Amendment was a cure. All right, now he was doing a lot of Lincoln worship in there. As I stated to you, this man worships Lincoln. He had his, remember when he launched his first presidential campaign? I think that was in 2007. Where did he launch it from? Springfield, Illinois, right? Well, guess who was the, what was Lincoln? Was he first elected to the House of Representatives? I believe he was. I don't think he was ever a senator. But he launched his political campaign from the same place that Lincoln launched his political campaign. Springfield, Illinois, right? And so he has, oh, I think he even has the bust of Lincoln in his, probably got it in his bedroom. I don't know, you know, in his Oval Office or something like that. So anyway, he was engaged in that Lincoln worshiping and then talking about the 13th Amendment being a cure. If the 13th Amendment was the cure to slavery, why does it still exist to this day? Again, we're talking about a constitutional lawyer. I'm talking about CEO of USA Inc., President Obama, as well as Abraham Lincoln was a lawyer as well. And I, people, you know, that whenever you sign, let's say, contracts written up by lawyers, what do they always tell you to do? Read the fine print. Read the fine print. Why do lawyers have such a low opinion of them generally? Most people don't like lawyers. They say lawyers are snakes and whatnot, and they're sneaky and they can't be trusted, them with their, you know, legalities and whatnot. All right. So I don't think there's any doubt that President Obama knows that that 13th Amendment exception clause allowed for a continuation of slavery. He's an attorney. He knows that's what that exception meant. Lincoln certainly knew it. He certainly knew it when it was written. I don't have the information up in front of me. Again, I do a lot of research, people. So if you think that, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about, or you want to challenge me on the facts, you are more than welcome to try. All right. You're more than welcome to try. But I take this very serious. I am a new abolitionist because I know that slavery was never abolished, just like 2,000 other people who are in our Facebook group moved to abolish 21st century slavery and human trafficking. So I do my research. I know what I'm talking about. But I came across, this was like a year and a half ago, I was doing some research, some kind of other historical research. It may not have even had anything to do with the history of slavery on this continent. But I came across some letters. Somebody had posted some letters, or they didn't post the actual letters online, but they, you know, transcribed it and put it online, where Lincoln was sending his friend. He was a congressman of Georgia, and they were friends before the Civil War, right? And then he had sent his friend letters telling him, I heard that, you know, most of the people in the South think that I'm going to abolish slavery, but let me just assure you, I plan on doing no such thing. All right. People want a lot. Yes, the Republican Party was founded as an abolitionist platform. Nobody did more for the founding of the Republican Party than the formerly enslaved African Frederick Douglass. All right. And so mostly abolitionists were in that party. And maybe they had some conversations with Lincoln behind closed doors and whatnot. And that's why he got the nomination, that they thought that he really was going to move to abolish slavery in the United States. Well, while he was probably lying to them behind closed doors, he was sending letters to this Georgia congressman, his good friend, telling him, I don't plan on abolishing slavery. I think you might have even heard President Obama allude to that. All right. So this is what I'm saying. This is what I think happened at the conclusion of the Civil War, in the waning days of the Civil War. All right. That in order to negotiate a ceasefire and to bring the Confederacy back in the Union, a deal was struck between Lincoln, because this same article I was reading talked about Lincoln meeting with an officer of the Confederacy, or I'm not sure if it was an officer of the Confederate Army or if it was a member of the Confederate government. I'm just not sure on that. I don't recall right now. But there was a meeting that Lincoln had with this individual, prominent individual from the Confederacy. And they were talking about the terms of surrender. And then, you know, I believe that in order to negotiate this ceasefire, that Lincoln pitched to him the 13th Amendment. It probably wasn't called the 13th Amendment at the time, but said, how can we come together so all these white boys ain't dying? Okay. And, you know, it's just too much bloodshed, brother killing brother, cousin killing cousin, and all of that. We need to stop all of this white on white violence. So, over these Negroes, you know, we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do it. So this is what we'll do. All right. We're going to allow you to keep practicing slavery, but you can't call it slavery. All right. And, you know, you can't hold people in bondage. You can't kidnap them and hold them captive and whatnot. And then create new victims by, you know, breeding them together. You got to let all them people go, like, you know, that's what the Emancipation Proclamation was for. And you can't import anymore because, you know, the international slave trade has been quote unquote abolished and whatnot. So here's how you can get your property back. I'm gonna show y'all how to do it, because, you know, most of the white people fighting in the Confederacy were poor and didn't own any enslaved Africans, but they had the dream that one day they too could be wealthy and they could own some enslaved Africans. And that's a true story from my county here in North Carolina, well, for North Carolina in general. But yeah, and so we're going to allow you wealthy whites to continue to practice slavery and get your property back, but you got to do it through the prison. See, we're going to push this amendment that has a caveat, that has a loophole, that has an exception clause that says that you can put them back into slavery, a state of slavery, whatever you want to call it, but you got to convict them of a crime first. So then that's when they started passing all the black codes, what's known as the black codes, what's known as Jim Crow. All right. Once they passed the black codes, you know, vagrancy laws, all of those type of laws, loitering, all of that type of stuff, that has its roots in the black codes of the South and the North, because they were passing the same kind of discriminatory laws in the North. So let's get that out of our head. Like, white people in the North weren't racist, because they most certainly was. Lincoln was a racist. All right. He came from Illinois. He was a racist. All right. So anyway, let's get that out. But the black codes were the laws that were passed where if you had, you know, a black person, let's say you had a couple of black people standing on the corner or whatnot, and they're talking about employment opportunities. Yeah, you know, I heard, you know, Mr. So-and-so might need some farm hands. You might want to check over there. And you're loitering. So here, you know, here comes the constable or the sheriff or whoever. Oh, these two niggas is loitering. Let me go ahead and arrest them. And then we can have a trial. And once they're convicted by all white jury, because obviously you weren't having, not even free black people were given the right to sit on a jury. And so then you, once you get that conviction, then I can hire them out to Mr. Jenkins' farm. And then I can get paid. See, now he doesn't get to just go to Mr. Jenkins' farm and get hired as a farmhand and get directly paid. No, once he is enslaved through the prison or through the jail, then he gets hired out to Mr. Jenkins, and then he's not the one that's going to get paid for his labor. No, the sheriff is, or the county is going to get paid, or the state is going to get paid. That's called the convict leasing program. The convict leasing program, which started shortly after the Civil War. Again, if you have not seen the movie or the documentary Slavery by Another Name, it's on YouTube. Go watch it. It's about an hour and a half long. But I have prepared a clip for you and just let you listen to a couple of to the promo for the documentary. So let me go ahead and pull that up for you and take a listen.
Buried in old courthouses, abandoned jails, libraries, and archives all across the South are tens of thousands of public documents and letters written by African Americans at the turn of the last century.
Mr. President, I have a brother about 14 years old. A man hired him for me and I heard of him no more. He went and sold him to McGree and they've been working him in prison for 12 months. He's done nothing wrong for them to keep him in chains.
Written more than 40 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, these letters bear witness to a sinister and little-known chapter in American history.
Whenever one is in a conversation where someone says, what's wrong with black people? Why can't they get over it? Slavery ended 150 years ago. That's fundamentally false. The reality is that slavery and all of the limitations that it imposed on the future and the potential and the progress of African American families, it didn't end 150 years ago. It continued until World War II, well into the lives of large numbers of African Americans today.
For more than 80 years following the Civil War, hundreds of thousands of African Americans in the South were pulled back into the shadow of slavery.
buying and selling African Americans ended with the 13th Amendment, but that did not translate into actual freedom.
One of the fascinating things about the text of that amendment is that it says that slavery is abolished, except in the case of a punishment for a crime.
With emancipation, the nature of both crime and punishment in the South changed dramatically. In state after state, county after county, laws were passed to criminalize black life.
It was a crime in the South for a farm worker to walk beside a railroad. It was a crime in the South to speak loudly in the company of white women. It was a crime to sell the products of your farm after dark. But the most damaging of all of these laws were the vagrancy statutes. In every Southern state, you became a criminal if you could not prove at any given moment that you were employed.
Once arrested, convicts released and forced to labor in coal mines, lumber camps, brick factories, and turpentine farms. They were shackled, imprisoned, and tortured, sometimes to the point of death.
The fact that blacks were treated the way they were, like animals. People could be just picked up and put in jail. They could be lost in the system. Nobody knew how to find them. They could be buried in some grave somewhere, and families still looking for them. Don't know where they are. I didn't know that the sheriff department could sell slaves to corporation steel plants and coal mines.
The constant threat of arrest and forced labor, like the threat of lynching, cast a shadow over the South. Slavery had ended, but true freedom had not begun.
All right, so that's the end of that clip. And then I even take issue with some of that. You know, and they are acknowledging the loophole of the 13th Amendment now. Let me just address something right quick for our, again, telephone number 704-951-5030, 704-951-5030 is the studio line. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. For those already dialed in, just hit *6 and 1. Or if you just dial in, just after you enter the number, hit *6 and 1. That'll put you in the queue. Or you can chime in via a video chat on blab.im for our program today. But somebody in Blab said, involuntary servitude wasn't abolished by the 13th Amendment when such was used as punishment for a crime and chattel. Chattel was simply property, including slaves, until 1865 when blacks were emancipated. We do not want to eliminate the 13th Amendment or any amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Our country is founded on this document and all its amendments. So obviously this country was not founded on the 13th Amendment because the 13th Amendment was not created until 1865. So it wasn't founded on anything. All right. What about the amendment to prohibit alcohol? You do know that there was a constitutional amendment that was passed to prohibit alcohol, right? And that's what gave rise to the gangs like, you know, Al Capone in Chicago, several different crime families out of New York. Bootlegging, you know, bootlegging became so big and so profitable. You do know to ban alcohol in this country, they had to pass a constitutional amendment, right? I think it was the 18th or the 19th Amendment. Don't quote me on that. But they repealed that. They repealed it after it was shown that alcohol prohibition doesn't work. So, you know, your information isn't correct. No one said anything about abolishing the 13th Amendment except for Venezuela. Venezuela, through the United Nations Universal Peer Review process, said to the United States this year that you're practicing slavery in prisons, you're practicing slavery in agriculture, and they were talking about the immigrant labor and whatnot. You're practicing slavery because, see, they are enslaved too through the 13th Amendment. All right. And so You're practicing slavery through the 13th Amendment, which legalizes it as punishment for crime, and you need to repeal that. And the United States didn't really give a reply, but just said, we'll table it, which means that we'll take it under advisement. All right. We ain't heard nothing about it on your corporate media that you probably watch and whatnot. Then you didn't hear about it, but you heard about it through the Black Talk Radio network. And if you are connected to people who work in the human rights arena, you would have known about it, you know, through them as well. So this whole notion about some sacred document, you can miss me with that kind of stuff. All right. You can really, really miss me with that, because number one, I probably know more about the founding of this country than 99.9% of people in this country. One of the things I recently just found out is that I'm a descendant of a person who was considered an American revolutionary. He didn't fight in the revolution, but he provided supplies and money, and you know, he pretty much helped fund it from right here where I sit in North Carolina. Our family still owns the property. Well, we own some of the property. A lot of it still has been stolen. I'm an African descended person. All right. And another one. So I know, you know, from history, a lot of what people think they know about the founding of this country is based on a bunch of lies. I would suggest that you go pick up the book, Lies My Teacher Told Me. All right. You can also find it on YouTube. It's a YouTube audio book as well. Lies My Teacher Taught Me. So people in the new abolitionist movement today, we haven't really come to a consensus. We have not said whether or not the 13th Amendment should be just entirely repealed, like they repealed, you know, the prohibition of alcohol, that amendment, or if they need to remove the exception clause of the 13th Amendment, which says that it's legal, you know, to, as long as you can convict somebody of a crime. Again, you just heard a promo from a documentary, Slavery by Another Name, and how all of these jails and whatnot were, you know, targeting black people with these dubious, unconstitutional, liberty-stealing laws. I ain't hear nobody back then talking about that. That's unconstitutional. We can't do that to them black folks and whatnot. No, they wasn't saying that. All right. They wasn't saying that, you know, this is just incorrect behavior. But one of the things that they mentioned in there still goes on today. You heard one of the persons speaking in that little clip I just shared with you saying how she didn't know the jails and stuff could sell slaves. She called them slaves, could sell, and they are slaves. And sell them to corporations. Well, y'all think that stuff don't go on today? Why do y'all think Bernie Sanders, y'all might have saw it, maybe you did not, but Bernie Sanders and Keith Ellison, the representative out of Minnesota, did y'all not see the press conference they had when Bernie Sanders introduced the Justice Is Not For Sale Act 2015? Have y'all read the Justice Is Not For Sale Act 2015? I know you don't hear a whole lot about it on social media. You don't hear a whole lot about it on Fox News, ABC, MSNBC. They don't really put a because they're corporations, and they probably connected to corporations that are invested in 21st century slavery and human trafficking. But what that Justice Is Not For Sale Act would do is ban all private prisons and jails in this country. Again, we have right now legislation that has been introduced in 2015 that would abolish a certain segment of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. It doesn't end it, but it would end a pillar. It would end, let's say, what's the word I'm looking for? It would just end one avenue through which they are practicing slavery, and that is through the private prisons. All right. Now, Correction Corporation of America in the GEO group, you may have heard of them, known as CCA in the GEO group. Kanye West tried to tell y'all about him, about them, when he came out with that song, New Slave, but a lot of people didn't get it. They didn't know what he was talking about, that these folks is still practicing slavery and whatnot. Those are the two largest private prison corporations, and I call them private prison slavers in the world. I think G4S, the British company, is in third. But the GEO Group, which is based in, where is the GEO Group based? In Boca Raton, Florida. And the CCA, I think, is based in Tennessee. Don't quote me on that. But these are American companies, but they're multinational, or I should say they're international companies, because the GEO Group just got a contract to take over the Australians' entire prison system. They privatized the entire prison system. Well, let's take it back to the United States, though. Do you know that the Correction Corporation has a contract with states like Louisiana and some others that states that you have to keep these prisons 90% full? And if you don't keep them 90% full, you still got to pay us for these empty cells? Now, if that ain't slavery, I don't know what is. Here you have a quota system and a financial incentive between a government and a corporation, a state government and a corporation, to keep their prisons full. It is by no mistake that the state of Louisiana has 7 times the prison population of China. And China's got 1 billion people. And like I said the other day, tell me who's really free. Who has the most freedom on this planet? Because I don't see China treating this 1 billion people like the people being treated here in the United States, which the entire United States has the world's largest prison slave labor force in the world. And yes, it's prison slave labor. Here is another mistake that people make. They assume that if you're being paid 10 cents an hour to go out there and pick beans or cabbage or tomatoes or whatever, that you're not an enslaved person because you're being paid. Listen, every enslaved African prior to 1865, some of them actually were paid a wage. That's where the term slave wages comes from. It don't come from Walmart, you know, not paying people a livable wage to the point that they got to go sign up for food stamps because, you know, they're not permitted to put in 40 hours a week and, you know, they're not paid a competitive wage and whatnot. That ain't where slave wages come from, people. Slave wages come from the fact that some enslaved Africans, in order to keep them happy and so they wouldn't run off, if they were skilled in like blacksmithing, perhaps they were a dressmaker or something like that, some of the profits from their labor was given to them. You know, it was probably pennies on the dollar, not a whole lot of money, but they were, you know, given a little bit of wages so that they can go purchase some trinkets and whatnot. Maybe they needed some shoes and Massa wasn't going to buy them no shoes. So Massa giving you part of your, giving you part of the profits he making off your labor in this slave way. So go buy your own shoes, you know, your shoeless slave or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So again, man, we have to do our due diligence in knowing history. We have to study the individual cases, the individual stories. So just cause somebody's getting paid 10 cents an hour, 25 cents an hour, a dollar an hour to do a job that would pay me or you at least $10 an hour or $15 an hour or even $20 an hour, that's slavery. If they are not being paid whatever the job market wage is for that, then it's slavery. It's slavery. Why do you think you can't find a customer service job out there? Oh, you still think they sending them jobs to India? Well, they heard you complaining about them people in India. You can't really understand their English, and you know, cause they speak the King's English and whatnot, and they have these heavy accents, and you're a Southern person like myself, and you don't understand what they're saying. So the corporations heard you, that was shipping them jobs overseas and to get to those Indians. They heard you, and they brought them back. But they didn't hire you. They didn't hire your family member. They didn't hire your neighbor. Who did they hire? Who did they get to do that work? They got enslaved prisoners to do that work. Okay, Jake from State Farm? No, that's wrong. That's fake. State Farm uses prison slave labor in his business practices. So Jake ain't from State Farm. He ain't calling you from the offices of State Farm. He is calling you from the offices of the prison farm. That's where he calling you from. Jake from ain't some, chubby white dude in a pair of khakis sitting in a cubicle, in State Farm offices. No. No, he's not. Jake is, he got busted for smoking meth. And, he was also selling meth on the side. And under the anti-liberty, unjust laws, the drug laws. So Jake been enslaved through the drug laws, even though he didn't harm another individual. And he didn't sell any meth to kids. And he only sold it to adults and whatnot. So he got arrested and then he got convicted. And now he is a slave answering phones on a prison farm for State Farm. That's where the job's going, man. Wake up. I was looking out the other day. We had some jail. We got a county jail here full of white people. Full of white people, man. Because they say this county is the meth capital of the world. And I don't think that they should be locked up for that. Long as they ain't breaking into my house, comes trying to steal my lawnmower or whatever. Long as they not harming me or mine, they can smoke all the meth they want to up there in that trailer park. All right, I don't think that I should have to pay taxes in order for them to be jailed or in prison here in North Carolina. I think that's a waste of my money, okay? I think that's a waste of my money. And so, again, these people can't find these jobs out here on the street, but you let them get put in prison. Go look up Unicor. You know what Unicor is? And let me spell it for you. UNICOR. UNICOR. Go type that in your search engine and come back and tell me what Unicor is. All right. And for those who don't have access to a computer, I'll tell you what Unicor is. Unicor is a corporation. It is a corporation. All right. That is a prison. It's a prison corporation. It is owned by USA Inc. I'm talking about United States of America Incorporated. I'm talking about the government that you're calling your government, but is really a corporation. All right. That corporation in Washington, D.C. owns Unicor. Go to Unicor's website and you will see that corporations can contract through Unicor to use prison slave labor for customer service, for textiles, for manufacturing. That's where the majority of U.S. military uniforms are made. Not in some textile mill down here in the South in North Carolina. I live in one of them mill towns, and the mill jobs is gone. The mills have closed. Where are all the meal jobs? Where are all the textile jobs? Where they're being done in prison now? Through slavery. So people, y'all need to wake up. You need to do your research. And you need to stop promoting these lies that slavery was abolished when clearly the 13th Amendment says that it's legal as long as you convict them of a crime first. What else did I write on here pertaining to President Obama's speech? Scars of the original sin is still with us. And that's the truth. But what is the original sin? Slavery ain't the original sin, okay? Genocide is the original sin on this continent. I am also a descendant of one of the indigenous Cherokee tribes of North Carolina, and I know the Cherokee tribes were in Georgia as well. I'm the descendant of one of them, all right, who just happened to be in a family that was able to hang on to some of their land, but most of them were. There were a bunch of wars going on here over land and property and whatnot, and most of them got put on the Trail of Tears. Y'all heard of the Trail of Tears, right? That's where they, you know, shipped them off to Oklahoma, and many of them died. You know, all the different indigenous tribes that were wiped out, that's America's original sin right there, and then slavery. But they're equally egregious, and one could even say slavery is a crime of genocide, all right? So, it, you know, for him to say, oh, some of the original sins are still with us, he wasn't talking about we still practicing slavery. Hey, did you know I'm the CEO of USA Inc., and we own a corporation called Unicor, where we put prisoners to work for corporations for pennies on the dollar. We don't even pay them the federal minimum wage. Okay. No, he didn't say that. He was talking about you're no longer going to see ships unloading Africans in chains at the ports of Charleston, you know, in South Carolina, in the Charleston Harbor. They're not going to be brought into New York to be, you know, put on the blocks there on Wall Street. All right. So, you know, that's what he was talking about. But did he tell you that Wall Street is still involved in slavery? Because guess what? The GEO Group, CCA, MTA, the Management Training Association, something like that. I may have that wrong, but that's another private prison in slavery in this country. They're all publicly traded on the stock market. So you too can become an enslaver today. All you need do is purchase stock in the GEO Group, the CCA, or MTA. Slavery is still with us, people. It ain't never been abolished. All right? And he talked about the black codes. Well, what about the drug laws now that we see today? Now there's this big debate going on about three strikes and you're locked up and a slave for life, and whether or not, you know, we need to end, which Bernie Sanders did introduce the amendment, or I would say legislation, to legalize cannabis, to end the federal prohibition on cannabis, right? And they don't even got an amendment to prohibit cannabis, which is marijuana or weed, like they had to pass an amendment to prohibit alcohol, which was repealed. That was an amendment. So anyway, what I'm saying is, all of these laws, the drug war laws, all of that, guess who wrote those laws? Guess who pushed those laws? Guess who got them politicians to vote for those laws? The corporations. A lot of you don't even know. We talk about Walmart and comparing the low wages that they pay to their workers as a form of slavery. But a lot of you don't even know that they use prisoners. When you do all of those returns after Christmas and return those gifts and whatnot, well, somebody got to break those packages down, and then those packages got to be repackaged. Those products got to be repackaged. Guess who's doing that work? Prison slaves are doing that work. That's who. So, but President Obama is not saying the original sin of slavery is with us, because Walmart, Victoria's Secret, who else? Wendy's, McDonald's, State Farm, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint are all using prison slaves so that they can increase their bottom line. See, they don't want to hire you out on the street, because then they got to give you insurance and they got to pay you, you know, a competitive wage. And why should they pay you that? They ain't even got to pay minimum wage to these prison slaves. So that just means more money for them and their shareholders. People, y'all need to freaking wake up, I'm telling you. But President Obama ain't talking about it in that context. Nobody got up there and gave a speech at this commemoration for the 13th Amendment and said, we need to end slavery for real this time. We need to close the loophole of the 13th Amendment and we need to end prison slavery. You didn't hear President Obama calling on Congress to pass the Justice Is Not For Sale 2015 Act. He ain't asked you to do that so he could sign it in his law and abolish all private prisons and jails in this country. That is historic in itself, and that is the first piece of abolitionist legislation to be introduced in over 150 years. It's in Congress right now collecting dust, probably. Bernie Sanders just introduced it when? Early November, sometime in November? President Obama and none of them members of the Black Political Caucus who Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, acknowledged as helping him put this charade together, ain't none of them get up there and say, people, slavery was never abolished. That is why the United States has more people in prison than any other country on the face of the planet. Russia doesn't lock up that many of its people. North Korea doesn't lock up that many people. China doesn't lock up that many people. Iran doesn't lock up that many people. Cuba doesn't lock up that many people. Venezuela doesn't lock up that many people. Canada, no. It is the United States of America with 5% of the world's population that has enslaved 25% or has 25% of the world's prison population. And the vast majority of them don't even belong there. Do murderers belong in prison? Yes. Do child molesters belong in prison? Yes. Do rapists belong in prison? Yes. Do thieves belong in prison? Yes. Do muggers? If you commit a crime that involves harming another human being, then you have committed a crime. If you have not done anything to anyone else, then you haven't committed a crime. The crime is these people in Washington, D.C. thinking that they can tell you what type of plants you can grow on your property and what type of plants you can consume. That's the crime right there. Not all of these white boys and white girls in my county smoking meth. They're not the criminals. The ones locking them up for smoking meth are the criminals. Because as long as they, you know, smoke their meth in their trailer park or in their house or wherever they're smoking their house and smoking it at, I don't care. How is that harming me? Is it harming them? Yes, it's harming them physically, mentally, perhaps emotionally. But I don't think prison is the place that you send people like that to get help. The intent is not to help these people. The intent is to enslave these people and make a profit off of them. That's what the intent is. It's not to help them get off of drugs. And all the functioning drug addicts that we get, hell, President Obama has admitted that he smoked a lot of weed when he was in school. He admitted he used cocaine in college, just like probably 50% of the people in this country. Now, I'm not going to say 50%, about 13% of the people of this country admit, and that's admit, probably more just won't admit it, that they have used some sort of quote unquote illegal drug. So, but you know, he was lucky enough not to get caught with his bag of weed or his little thing of cocaine. I don't even know how they sell cocaine. He was lucky enough not to get caught by one of these neo-slave catchers out there. He was lucky enough not to get convicted by a jury. And he was lucky enough not to get sentenced to slavery for using marijuana or cocaine when he was a young person. He was lucky. He one of the lucky ones. Because I can tell you, if he had gotten arrested, had gotten convicted, and had gotten enslaved, he would not be president today. He would not be the chief executive officer of USA Inc. And it's a crime for him and all the rest of them to continue to enslave people through these unjust laws. So, again, the telephone lines is open. Oh, man, the time has really went by. In case you can't tell, this is a very important topic to me. Very important. And what can be more important than abolishing slavery in this country? I'm willing to go to war to end slavery in this country. Now, when I was a young man, I joined the United States Army to get a college, to get the GI Bill. And so I wouldn't go into debt paying off college loans. So I joined the military. All right. So I ended up being sent off to the Gulf War and whatnot. And since I put my name on that contract, I didn't want to go. But since I put my name on the contract and I'm a man of my word, I went. Thank God I didn't have to shoot anyone, because that wasn't my job over there. I'm a communications specialist. So, if I was willing to go to war for some college money, how much more should I be willing to go to war to end slavery for real in this country? And I don't say that to sound bombastic. I'm not saying that to score any, he's keeping it real, points or whatever. I say it because I mean it. Because I recognize that slavery was never abolished in this country. And the only way that it may get abolished is that somebody gonna have to fight a war. Perhaps we do need another civil war to end slavery once and for all. And it ain't no black or white thing. It ain't no black versus white. It's justice versus injustice. Either you want a system that's based on justice, or you want to continue a system that's based on slavery and racism. I, for one, do not want my grandsons to grow up and have that threat out there that they could be put into slavery over some BS because a bunch of politicians in the pockets of some private prison companies passed some laws to increase the prison population, to increase the profits of these corporations. These people are evil and they deserve death. They deserve nothing less than death. I see it as being no different than an abolitionist in the 1800s saw it. This is evil that's being practiced, people. And they have these little BS ceremonies and whatnot to get you to continue to believe this lie that something was done like abolishing slavery that they know full well has not been abolished. If so, why didn't they frame the doggone 13th Amendment and blow it up in poster size and have it sitting right there for all those people to read that's sitting in that hall? Why they didn't blow up the 13th Amendment, frame it, and have it right there in front of the podium for everybody? Since they so proud of the 13th Amendment, then how come ain't none of them read it in its entirety? I think one person might have read it in its entirety, but it probably went over that person's head that these jokers are still practicing slavery. This does not abolish slavery. It says plainly, except for punishment for crime. Oh my God, this is mad. This is what we're calling mass incarceration. It's really a continuation of slavery. I don't see how I can make it any much more plainer than I've already made it. Let me get ready to wrap up the program. I did have a couple of other topics I wanted to share. Again, I got to get off air in time for a Tando Radio show. We'll be coming on air. They'll be talking about current events that is leading us into a global war on the horizon. So Tando Radio show, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Hope that y'all will tune in. I'm gonna save this woman Abigail Fisher. I'm gonna save her for tomorrow. We'll talk about her tomorrow. This whole notion that affirmative action is helping a bunch of black people is a lie. Affirmative action is benefiting more white people than it's benefiting anybody black, and I can tell you that, and there are some facts to prove it, because white women are classified as minorities in this country, but that, and this is a white female, so really she has no standing, considering how white females are affirmative action people who benefit from affirmative action. And I'll talk a little bit about that more tomorrow, because I had a real world experience with that. So, but the last thing I want to share with you, there's this notion. The Guardian published this article today. It says the United States needs more black lawyers. Well, if they're going to be black lawyers like President Barack Obama, we don't need them. All right, we don't need them, because all they're going to do is continue to pretend like slavery was abolished. All right, they're going to pretend like slavery was abolished, because if we abolish slavery, then we won't need so many lawyers, wouldn't we? See, lawyers profited off of modern-day slavery, trying to keep people out of modern-day slavery, you know? So I'm saying there is a whole lot of ways that this economy is based on slavery that a lot of people don't even know about. But I'm here to tell you that just having more black attorneys, having more black police, having more black representatives, having more black senators, having more black police chiefs, having more black mayors ain't going to lead to us having a system based on justice, when many of these same black people are more than willing to uphold the system of racism and injustice in this country. They are not abolitionists. All right, they are not. And in the case of the black cop, did y'all not see that black cop who helped Michael Slager, the white cop, file a false police report over why he killed Walter Scott? Y'all forgot about that, right? Because only Michael Slager has been charged in the killing of Walter Scott. But what about the black cop who was on the scene and saw it and then filed a false police report? Okay, what about that black cop? All right. What about the black cop supervisor who supervised the strangling of Eric Gardner on a New York street in Staten Island? That was a black cop supervising that lynching, that modern day lynching of this cop Daniel Panatello choking out Eric Gardner over some cigarettes, selling cigarettes. Again, tell me who in this world is free and who ain't. Then you got, you know, these judges, a lot of them, black judges, still sentencing people to slavery over unjust laws, who ain't standing up and saying, you know what, there's only been one judge, his name is Stevens. I think he's in Alabama. And he said, I'm not going to be sending all these people to jail in prison over these drug laws. I'm going to sentence them to drug treatment. Do you know the prosecutors complained to the state Supreme Court to have this man disbarred, this judge disbarred, because he didn't want to practice 21st century slavery and human trafficking through the drug laws? He is a black judge, and he is the only judge that I know, the black judge that I know, who is actually trying to practice justice from the bench. The rest of them just part of the system, man. They are part of the system. Look at Hillary Clinton. Her and Bill Clinton has done more to enslave black people than probably Abraham Lincoln. All right? Through the three strikes and all of that, and the zero tolerance she pushed for in her book, It Takes a Village. But yet you got every single black representative up there in Congress already has endorsed Hillary Clinton. And this woman is an enemy of the black community. Her and her husband are enemies of the black community. But yet here they are backing her. And the process ain't even played out yet. Then you got this other black dude, this black writer, the other day going to write, Hillary Clinton will do more for black people than Barack Obama. Barack Obama ain't done nothing for us. Nobody's done nothing for us. Anything we have attained, we've gotten ourselves. So let's get that notion out of here. But again, just cause a person is black, or just cause a person's white or brown or whatever hue they have, that does not mean that they are going to practice justice. That does not mean that they are not evil people. All right? Skin color ain't got nothing to do with your ability to practice justice or your ability to practice injustice. You're either an evil person or you're not. And I don't want to see that is not the solution to 21st century slavery and human trafficking. It's not the solution of hiring more black slave catchers to catch slaves in the black community. No, that is not an answer. The answer is not to we need more black attorneys to, you know, prosecute us, because they, you know, they end up as prosecutors as well. So anyway, I hope that you have been enlightened today. If you thought slavery was abolished in this country in 1865, I hope that you learned today that it was not abolished and that we need to abolish it. All right. So if you would like to become an abolitionist, if you're on Facebook, join us in our group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery and Human Trafficking. It is a people of all backgrounds. We got Republicans, we got Democrats, we got Muslims, we got Christians, we got atheists, we got men, we got women, we got whites, Asians, all of that. People who recognize the fact that slavery was not abolished, and we have come together to educate each other on this issue and to advocate for ending of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. So again, that is Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery. And I'll type that in the chat room for those that's in the chat room on Blab. But really, all you need to do is type in the Facebook search engine, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery, and it should come right up. And so let me go ahead and share that group with you, and we hope that you will join us and become a new abolitionist, so hopefully we can end slavery this time around for real and without bloodshed. But it may take bloodshed, and I got blood to give to such a worthy cause to really truly end slavery in this country. I will be back on air 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with another episode of Black Talk Radio News. Just want to say thank you to those who tuned in. Even if you didn't chime in, I know you're out there listening. But thank you. And please share this information with other people. Peace and blessings. Oh, I almost forgot. Y'all know I got to close out properly. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc., that America is a battlefield, and casualties are being created on that battlefield every day. So to decrease the likelihood that you will become a new slave or a casualty, you need to develop codification. You need to develop battlefield awareness, situational awareness, whatever you want to call it, so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a 21st century slave or a dead casualty lying out there on the street. There are no guarantees. You can do all the right things and still end up in that position. But we just want you to know that the conditions exist so that you can take proper precautions. With that said, peace and blessings to all.
We set the foundation. Come on. And repent to the east. 1, 2, 3, and a 3, 2, 1. Me walk free, God.
Scotty, I'm here on a different line. I'm ready.
I see you. Is that 909?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Weapon and contact for the next level.